This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way.
I'm Molly.
And I'm Matthew.
And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
And today we're talking yakisoba.
Woohoo!
You want to peel back the curtain and explain what just happened to the people? The people love a peek behind the curtain.
The people love it when we reveal the great and all-powerful Oz. So what just happened is we just recorded this episode.
No, we didn't.
We just didn't record 25 minutes of what we thought was this episode, but we had not hit the record button. So we are doing take
that
two.
That was so generous of you to say we had not hit the record button, since it is strictly my job to do that.
Oh, Matthew, we're a team.
Yeah.
We're a team. I think we're going to be so much funnier this time around. It's all for the best.
And we're going to be tight. We're going to be thick, like the thickest frozen noodles. It's all good.
It's great. And we have a special guest today who we will reveal momentarily.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And who's patient enough with us to stick around and say all of this again.
Yes. Last time, it was her first appearance on Spilled Milk. And now, 26 minutes later, it will be her second appearance. All right.
Okay.
So, Let's go down memory lane. We're just gonna like zoom down memory lane like in a rented Ferrari.
I'll go first.
Go first.
And I'm gonna begin by, just for the listeners who have never had yakisoba, I can say that it's a Japanese stir-fried noodle dish, usually with pork, cabbage, and onions, although there are lots of variations. And it's flavored with a sweet, fruity sauce that's similar to tonkatsu sauce. Did I get that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So my memory lane is not long. My first and probably second time having yakisoba, it was with you, when you first took me to Tokyo in 2017. And you took me to your favorite neighborhood place for okonomiyaki called Penguin Village in the Nakano neighborhood of Tokyo. And Penguin Village has these low tables. What are they called, Matthew? These...
Not sure.
Teppanyaki? Is that it?
Oh, teppanyaki is the grill that's on the table.
Oh, okay. So there are these low tables with this grill, this like griddle fitted into them, and you make your okonomiyaki right on the table. Well, as you can imagine, this griddle is also a fantastic place to make stir-fried noodles. And so I had my first yakisoba with you at Penguin Village, and it was delicious, except I think you put too much pickled ginger in it.
Does sound like something I would do. My first yakisoba experience was at a place on Broadway that's closed years ago, and it's one of these restaurants that's closed, and because it no longer exists, it takes on kind of an outsized footprint in your memory lane. It was called Ezo Noodle Cafe. I don't think it even said yakisoba on the English menu. I think it just said like stir fried noodles, but it was clearly yakisoba in retrospect. And it was a ramen restaurant, but they served yakisoba, and it became like my favorite thing on the menu, and I would order it all the time. And then I don't know if I really encountered it again until Penguin Village years later.
Nice. Okay. So would you have said, Do you think, looking back, that the one at Ezo Noodle Cafe was good in retrospect?
I think it was probably pretty good. And yakisoba is one of those things that is pretty hard to mess up, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll go with that.
All right. So you want to, unless you, someone like me is involved and puts in too much pickled ginger. Other than that, if you keep me away from your yakisoba, it's going to be good.
Yes. Okay. Well, let's bring in our listener who...
or our guest, even. Who is a listener?
Who is a listener? Let's bring in our special guest, Matthew. Bring her in.
Oh, I'm the special guest? Oh, no. Our special guest is longtime listener and writer for our favorite Japanese food website, JustOneCookbook.com. It's Kayoko Paku Hirata. Kayoko, welcome to Spilled Milk.
Hello.
Welcome Hello. Back to Spilled Milk.
Oh, we are going to have even more fun the second time we say all the same things we said the first time.
That's right. No. Let's stipulate that everything we said the first time is off limits, and this time it's going to be all lies.
I was thinking that you were going to make us find synonyms for everything that we had said the first time. It's going to be like, Kayoko, I hope that you've got an English language thesaurus near you, because you can't use any of the same words again.
Yes, exactly.
This is a new special game we play.
Yes. All right. Kayoko, did you eat yakisoba growing up? And if so, like how often and how was it made? And was it something you would eat at home or at a restaurant or both?
Yes. So I grew up eating yakisoba. It was something that my mom would make during the weekend when she didn't feel like cooking. She would use up leftover scraps of veggies and protein in the fridge and fill our stomachs up.
Yeah, it's really that kind of dish, but like for being that kind of like, you know, sloppy Joe sort of dish, it's like incredibly good.
I can't believe you just like used the word sloppy Joe anywhere near it. It has nothing to do with sloppy Joe's, Matthew. People are going to be picturing like noodles with like chunked up saucy beef on top.
It's not like sloppy Joe's, but Kayoko, when you were talking about that, like what jumped to mind was like, you know, what did my mom make like to fill up three hungry kids when she didn't feel like cooking? It was canned sloppy Joe mix. I'm not saying that's good.
I get it. Okay. So, okay, hold on. When I first encountered the word yakisoba, I only knew soba in the context of buckwheat noodles. Can we talk about like the word itself?
So when people think of soba, they usually think of the grayish buckwheat noodles, but soba actually encompasses all noodles. So the word yaki means cooked and soba is noodles. So yakisoba meaning fried noodles, stir-fried noodles. There's also yaki udon, which is fried udon noodles,
yeah,
prepared
that's really
similarly
good too.
The same way as yakisoba, brown sauce, veggies, stir-fry.
In the case of yakisoba, so the noodles are, they're actually like ramen noodles. It's a wheat flour noodle that's kind of more like yellowish in color.
The wheat noodles are, they go, kansui is added to the noodles. A chemical reaction occurs to the noodles, so it has a yellowish tinge
and kind of a springy texture, I would say, like ramen noodles, like especially, yeah, like fresh ramen noodles that like, you know, you can boil them and then stir fry them, but they're not going to get mushy unless you like really overboil them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're a little bit more thicker than ramen noodles, so it holds up even when stir fried.
So let's talk about how this dish kind of comes together, because like we mentioned sauce, but it's not really a saucy dish. Like how do you, Kayoko, when you make yakisoba now, like how do you make it, and like what do you like to put in, and like what do you like to garnish it with?
So whenever I make yakisoba, I do the same with my mom. It's also, I can clean up the fridge with leftover scraps. I like adding whatever sturdy vegetables, like bell peppers, leeks, scallions. And for protein, besides sliced meat, I like adding fried tofu, atsuage, frozen seafood mixes, and ground meat. And sometimes if I'm feeling fancy, I might add a fried egg on top.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah.
That sounds very good.
I also love the idea of leeks in there. I hadn't thought about that, but I bet they, you know, they would caramelize a tiny bit. Like, I don't know. Oh my gosh, that sounds so good.
Yeah. I mean, that's like probably my favorite thing about yakisoba is how the, you know, you cook, if you're using sauce, whether you're using sauce or a seasoning packet, it's not like a wet dish. You cook it down so that the noodles themselves kind of like caramelize a little bit against the pan. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Besides the brown sauce, I like using fish sauce for a lighter version, lime salt. And if I want a little bit of spice, I get a little bit of gochujang, the Korean spicy paste, or
Dayu,
which is chili oil, or shumi, a little bit of shumi on top.
Oh, yeah. I will often put homemade, like I love making homemade chili oil, and I will often add that like just before serving, kind of toss that with the yakisoba.
Matthew, what do you usually season yours with at home?
So the one I make at home is kind of vaguely inspired by this one that we had at Penguin Village, which was called their barbecue yakisoba. Like, basically, like, I think about Penguin Village pretty much every day. It's the restaurant where, and I know we've told this story on the show before, after we ate there the first time, I wrote about them in my book, Pretty Good Number One, and I described one of the owners as looking like a Japanese Patrick Swayze, which is true. And then we went back after my book had been translated into Japanese, and the guy like called me aside and said, "You think I look like Patrick Swayze?" And he was kind of insulted by this. And I, to this day, like, I've never been more perplexed by anything than how someone could be insulted by being compared to Patrick Swayze. So we were talking about food. That's right. So they have this dish on the menu called barbecue yakisoba, where the meat is like ground beef or ground pork, and then the sauce, rather than being like the tonkatsu style sauce, is more like yakiniku sauce. So like sugar, mirin, soy sauce, and maybe sake also. So it doesn't have that kind of fruitiness to it, but it still has the sweetness, and it like cooks down and caramelizes really well because of the sugar. So that's how I do it at home. Often, not always ground meat, sometimes no meat, sometimes sliced pork belly, whatever I've got.
I have been making mine seasoned with soy sauce and mirin in equal parts, and then a good spoonful of chili crisp. I don't love the sweetness of that one that I had at Penguin Village. And I wanted one that, that didn't have as much sweetness. So this one that I've been making with soy sauce and mirin and chili crisp is like just right for me. I love it. And I usually use bacon in mine. I'll like start out by cooking some chopped bacon and then use the bacon fat, or at least some of it, to cook the vegetables and the noodles too. And so I think that the kind of smoky flavor of that with the soy sauce and mirin and chili crisp, it like really does it.
Do you do any either of you do any toppings or garnishes?
I don't like the red pickled ginger, beni shoga. I find it a little bit too sweet and a little bit artificial flavoring, and I end up never using up the package that I buy at the supermarket.
Sure.
I put a lot of aonori, which is seaweed flake, which most of it sticks to your teeth anyways, and bonito flakes as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's those two garnishes that like really give it like a Japanese flavor to me, like as opposed to like, I assume it probably derives from a Chinese stir-fried noodle dish. Kayoko, do you know?
Yes, so I looked up the history of yakisoba, and actually it's from chow mein, which is a Chinese stir-fried noodle stir-fry. The difference between chow mein noodles and yakisoba noodles is that chow mein noodles have egg in it, and it has a distinctively yellow color to it. The origins of yakisoba is from chow mein. It was brought to Japan in the post-war period, most likely from soldiers and families who were living in northern China when Japan occupied northern China during the war, and brought over by the returnees who felt nostalgic of the food there. So yakisoba, I guess people think of it as Japanese, and maybe it fits in the category of chuka ryori, which is the Japanese-Chinese cuisine, but most people associate it as Japanese food.
So it's not a dish that goes back like 100 years in Japan. It's relatively new to Japan, right?
I almost wonder if the version that I make maybe tastes more like lo mein, because I don't usually put any garnishes on top. I can absolutely see how if I were to put aonori or bonito flakes or the pickled ginger on top, it would turn it like more toward Japan.
Yeah. So Kayoko, like we've noticed that typically you will get yakisoba like at an okonomiyaki restaurant where there's already like a teppanyaki grill on the table. And, mm-hmm. you know, those are both foods that are served at Japanese festivals. And so they're kind of thought of together. Are there restaurants that specialize in yakisoba, or is it only something that is sort of like a side dish at a restaurant that does something else?
There's been a yakisoba boom here. In Tokyo and other places as well, there's a lot of yakisoba specialty shops that have opened up. There are some that are very high-end, uses really high-quality ingredients. And there's also low-end, very old-school, nostalgic yakisoba shops as well.
Wow. I didn't know this at all before you mentioned it. I really hope this boom is still going on the next time we're allowed to go to Tokyo.
Most likely, yeah. Should be around.
Are there regional differences in yakisoba? This is something that I have never really thought about until you said you should put regional differences on the agenda. That's another peek behind the curtain. Like, I think of it as always being kind of cut from a similar cloth, but are like, you know, there's lots of regional dishes in Japan. Is yakisoba one of them?
Yes. There's a lot of regional differences from northern Japan up to the south. Each region, it seems like, has their own distinctive way of preparing it, whether they source local ingredients, how it's cooked and served, toppings. Like there was one that would have a side of curry or like mapo tofu or somewhere in soup, and the noodles, some of the noodles were really thin and some were really thick.
You know what? I realize now, actually, I did not actually eat this regional variation, but one time when I was in Tokyo, I took the train out to Higashi Murayama, which is way out on kind of the western fringe of Tokyo. Although Tokyo, so it's not even quite the western fringe, but it's way out to the west. And it's like a small town, but still within the city of Tokyo, because that's how Tokyo rolls. I was going to this tea shop, and I got some tea, and I talked to the nice people who own the tea shop. The guy who owned the tea shop, the pop of the mom and pop, was like, oh, you know, while you're in Higashi Murayama, you should try some of our local foods, including our local yakisoba, which I believe was called Higashi Murayama Kudo Yakisoba, so black yakisoba. So, and he like had a magazine about like, you know, stuff you should do when you're in Higashi Murayama. and I think it was made with squid ink and like a spice blend. And I did not get to try it. Although after I had tea at the tea place, the guy insisted on walking me the 20 minutes back to the train station and checked on the way to see if one of the Kudo Yakisoba places was open so we could try it. But it was like 9:15 in the morning. So of course it wasn't.
That is delightful.
Yeah.
Next time.
I see this thing on the menu. Wow. I wish there were a menu in front of me. I see this thing on the agenda, yakisoba pan. What is that?
Yes. For people who love carbs, yakisoba pan is yakisoba, basically that's like a hot dog bun. So it's a pretty popular offering at Japanese bakeries, maybe in the States as well. You know, it's very cheap. It fills you up because of the double carbs.
So is it yakisoba in like a bun?
Yes.
Amazing.
So portable yakisoba.
Wow.
Okay. I've had it. It's very good.
I can't. It doesn't seem like something that I would be drawn to, but I don't know why, because I love yakisoba. The next time I run across one, I will buy it.
Yeah, I think they might sell it at Uwajimaya, actually.
Really?
Oh. Maybe.
Oh, this is exciting.
What about omusoba? What's that?
Omusoba, I think this is more of an offering that you would see at okonomiyaki places, but it's egg crepe omelet over yakisoba.
Ah. Oh,
that sounds good.
Nice.
I once had pad thai served that way, which was very tasty.
That sounds delicious.
I mean, is there anything you could wrap in an omelet that wouldn't be good?
No. Well, we can come up with something here.
Next week, we're doing M&Ms is our episode. So maybe not that.
Maybe not that. Maybe not a donut from Mr. Donut. I don't think I want a donut inside
an omelet. Probably not. Oh, speaking of Mr. Donut, Kyoko, like right now, it's my favorite season in Japan, even though I've never been to Japan in late January, early February. And it's the time of year when Mr. Donut releases its special Valentine's Day chocolate donut series. So if you happen to get to a Mr. Donut and want to try the Pierre Marcolini branded chocolate donut series for us, we would love to hear about it.
I will definitely check it out. But yeah, Tokyo is a nice, it's a nice time of year to visit Tokyo. It's dry, it's not that cold, and it doesn't rain that much.
Oh, I would love to be there.
Yeah, we're lonely. Can we please come visit?
Yeah. You know, we should mention that the three of us have actually met in person before.
Yes.
Back in 2017, we all had fruit parfaits at Takano together, right? Is that where we were?
Yeah.
And we should do it again sometime.
I think we'll be able to someday.
Someday.
Kyoko, anything else about yakisoba that we didn't get to that you feel like we left out?
If I can plug Just One Cookbook.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'm a writer for Just One Cookbook. It's a very big recipe site that specializes in Japanese home cooking. It's operated by Nami and her husband, Mr. JOC. And she has a bunch of recipes for yakisoba as well as yakisoba pan. And she also has a video of how to make yakisoba. So if readers would be interested in checking out her videos and her recipes, we would appreciate it very much.
Yeah, we will link to that in the show notes for sure. You know, Molly and I, like we've said this over and over, and it remains true and will always be true. Anytime we want to know how to make a Japanese dish, we always go to Just One Cookbook. It's always our first and only stop. There's always an easy recipe there that comes out great.
I co-sign on all of that.
All right. Well, Kyoko, thank you so much for joining us on Spilled Milk. It was a pleasure, and we must do it again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Here's to the paper pushers, the rush hour warriors, and the gotta get awayers. Trade the daily grind for a place to unwind, where you can rise with the tide and roll down the boardwalk, where you can eat French fries for lunch and ice cream for dinner, where your only commute is your walk to the beach, where every day feels like Saturday. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend, I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close, though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
23 classes. And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to do to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, you go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Okay, Matthew, it's time for some segments.
Yes.
It sounds like it's time to cut open a citrus fruit.
Yeah, I've been eating some orange. This is our citrus segment. It's a new segment that's debuting right now. Wife of the show, Lori, got a bag of oranges from Trader Joe's, and we are surprised that they were not seedless oranges. They were seedful oranges.
That is so distressing. I hate that.
But you know what? You've seen me eat oranges, right? It's like absolutely revolting.
No,
I have this way of eating oranges that means it doesn't matter whether there are seeds because I'm going to spit most of it out anyway. I cut the orange into wedges. And then I like put the wedge in my mouth and kind of suck some of the juice out and then put it in the compost.
So you don't eat any of the solids?
No.
Are you serious? You're a monster.
Well, okay, but think about it this way. If I took that orange and made fresh squeezed orange juice with it, would I be a monster? Because I'm just doing that segment by segment.
I don't like our citrus segment.
All right. This segment's never going to happen again. It's a one-time segment.
Okay.
That's one of many reasons this episode is going to be a collector's item.
Do we have any spilled mail today?
Oh, thanks for using the name of the segment. No, we don't. Oh,
cool. Okay. I don't have anything for my quilting segment, but I'm thinking that the past couple nights, Ash and I have been like too tired to even like watch a show at night. We've like just gotten into bed and sort of like stared into space. But I'm thinking that tonight we might watch a show. And if we watch a show, I think I might be able to finish the hand quilting of my quilt. And then I move on to the last step, which is the worst step, which is sewing on the binding.
Why is that the worst? Because it's tedious or difficult or dangerous?
I've only done it once before because this is only my second quilt. But it's a little, the way that I did it the first time worked really well, but it was sort of nerve-wracking because of the way that I had to sort of like make things line up. And then the way that you fold the corners to make them really beautiful and crisp, like as you turn
love
the corner
crisp
from
corners.
One
we did
side.
A whole. We did a whole episode about it. Crusty corners.
We did. Anyway, I'll report back when I'm working on the binding. And also, I should say that the last time I made a quilt has gone down in history within our household because when I'm stitching on the binding, I machine stitch one side of it and then fold it to the back of the quilt and then hand stitch the second side of the binding. I know this makes
sense. Yep, I and everyone else knows exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. You don't know
what I'm talking about. what you're saying
but
perfectly.
But anyway, I stabbed myself with the non-pointy end of the needle so hard that when I pulled my hand back, like recoiled in terror, it was like in my hand. Yeah.
Isn't this what a thimble is designed to avoid?
So here is what I learned. Yeah. So this was before I owned a thimble. And now I own thimbles, multiple thimbles. So I'm really just hoping to get through the binding process without putting the wrong end of a needle in my finger. And I think I've got the goods to help me do that.
I feel like if that happened to me, I would just walk around wearing 10 thimbles thereafter.
Just for, like, no matter what you were doing.
No matter what I'm doing.
It was horrifying.
Yeah.
I also don't have any Animal Crossing updates. Do you have any cute animals?
I do. So we've been watching, Jeopardy, Alex Trebek's final episode aired a few weeks ago, and the first guest host of Jeopardy is Jeopardy champion Ken Jennings, and so we've been watching his episodes. The fact that Ken Jennings is on has nothing to do with this. There was a...
I was going to say, your voice suddenly sort of like took a turn. Like, I feel like you have an opinion about Ken Jennings.
I don't think he's great.
Okay. You heard
it
here first.
That's my opinion.
Another fiery rant from Matthew. Well,
that makes it sound like I don't think he's a great Jeopardy player. Clearly, he's a great Jeopardy player as a host and like as a personality. Maybe not perfect.
You know who they should have hired to be the host?
Yeah.
the husband-wife duo of Matthew Amsterburton and Lori Amsterburton.
Oh, Seattle's first family of Jeopardy.
Seattle's first family of Jeopardy. I mean, what were they thinking? The two of you together? Like an
unstoppable
duo. You guys are a force.
Yes, we would have rolled over all the contestants. Lori would read the clue, and I'd be like, "I can answer that." And she'd be like, "You're not playing. You're the host."
Okay.
That's why they didn't hire us. So there was a category called Earth at Night, which featured many cute animals, and we're going to link to. You can watch the whole category on YouTube. But two of the animals featured were a baby python climbing a tree. I think it was a python. It might have been another kind of snake.
And it was cute?
Oh, yeah. Very cute. And spectral tarsiers, which is like a little primate.
Oh, wait. Hold on. I've got it right here.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
right. Oh, wildebeests. They've got wildebeests. Oh, yep. Wait. Oh, hold on. Oh, God. Oh, there's an owl. There's an owl.
Yeah. Well, this was a real smorgasbord of cute animals. Maybe that's not the best word.
Oh, God, this is so exciting. I'm just scrolling through. The baby python is not one of the cuter ones. I'll be honest. It's terrifying.
But I thought it was pretty, I don't know if it's cute, but it was pretty cool.
Okay, the owl, though, you see it kind of scamper across the ground, and that's pretty cute.
Yep. Did you get to the spectral tarsiers yet? This is probably our most popular segment, don't you think?
Yeah. I've been getting some Instagram DMs from people. At first, I got one from somebody who... like just wrote cute animals and like forwarded me a video, and I was like, I was like, what the heck is this about? And I deleted it because it didn't occur to me that it had to do with this segment. I'm so sorry, whoever you were, if I didn't reply to you, it's because I just didn't make the connection.
Do you remember what the cute animal was, or was
I didn't
it like
even look at the video? I was like, right. What is this weird random DM? But then somebody did send me a DM, and by that point, I was conscious, and I was able to understand what was happening, and I forwarded it on to you. And I'm not going to say what it is in case we wind up using it in a future segment.
And I don't remember.
I don't. Either. That's what I was trying to avoid.
Okay. Great. I think the chances of this cute animal appearing in a future segment are zero. Because...
Oh my God. Wait, Matthew, I see the spectral tarsier thing. It looks like the thing from
Gremlins? Yes, it looks like a mogwai.
Oh, it pulls on its own ears.
It pulls on its ears like to hear better at night or something.
Oh God, it was so cute. It hurts.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah, but do not feed it after midnight.
Will it turn into a pumpkin or a...
No, it'll turn into a gremlin.
Oh, I haven't actually seen the movie.
I have seen the movie, but it was a very long time ago. And also, I read the novelization of the movie Gremlins and before I saw the movie.
Wow, Matthew, that is an A-plus nerd move, and
yeah.
I love it.
Well, like, I was at someone's house, and this Gremlins book was sitting out, so I'm like, hey, it's a book.
So you were that kid who would like go over to play at somebody's house, and you would just like hole up with a book and ignore your friend?
Yeah, I think I was. The way you say that, it seems like you never did that.
No, I was the kid who would sort of like call my parents to come get me early.
Oh, I would for sure do that also. And I'd be like, do you have any more snacks?
Okay.
All right. Go cook dinner for your family. I'm going to go eat dinner with my family. You can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com, facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast.
No, wait a minute. We're not there anymore.
No, we're not there anymore. Wow. Taping the show, like having a guest throws me off. Like taping the show at 6 p.m. You know, I think maybe the reason I said that is because I'm a time traveler from the past.
You are. But you know where we are? We're on Reddit.
We're on Reddit. reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
Our producer is Abby Circatella.
Yep. She's going to cut out that thing
she's
I said about Facebook.
Hate us.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on anymore. Thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
Oh, let me look at the agenda. the show that's commonly found at festivals, okonomiyaki restaurants, and in home kitchens.
I mean, that's true, except for I don't know if we're found at a lot of festivals.
We're sometimes found eating in okonomiyaki restaurants. Wow, whenever I say that, the word goes on so much longer than I expect, and I'm like still pronouncing it, even as my brain has moved on to the next thing.
I think it would be fair to say that it's kind of a fun word in Japanese as well as English. I'm Matthew Amster Burton,
and I'm Molly Weisenberg.
Oh my God, hang on, stop. I did not start the recording. None of this was recorded. All right, it's always better the second time.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in LA, a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in LA, debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.